Hello and welcome to Dram Slam. This is Vin from the future here. What you're about to hear is episode 5 of Dram Slam, recorded with Amy. And it's been a while since I recorded this episode, but through a few different things like moving house, catching COVID and whatnot, it's been a few months since we actually had one. So we're calling this a kind of like mid-season writer's strike almost. But yeah, so I thought I would just do a little intro to let you know what's happening and why it's taken so long. But this is still technically season 1. We've got a good few more episodes to come after this. So please do stay tuned and hit the subscribe button on any kind of podcasting platform or whatnot. And we'll go straight into the next episode. Thanks for all your patience and hopefully you'll enjoy the ones coming up. Hi everyone, welcome to No Nonsense Whiskey. My name is Vin PF and on today's Dram Slam episode we've got a very special guest. But before I get into that, I want to talk to you a little bit about the podcast version of this video. So if you're watching this on YouTube, obviously it's a video, but now this is available as a podcast as well. So make sure you go and search for Dram Slam on your favourite podcast platform to get hold of that if you prefer to consume it like that. And of course, Patreon is an instrumental part of this channel. If you'd like to check out more support on the channel, then please do go and check out my Patreon. You can check out all the links below in the show notes and the description. So on to today's guest, we have Amy Seaton. She is a business owner of Grain & Glass in Birmingham and the Birmingham Whiskey Club, a festival organiser, whiskey specialist, and of course, my friend, Amy Seaton. How are you doing, Amy?
Very good, thank you. Nice to be here.
Excellent, excellent. How are you feeling about the drams on the table today?
Interesting, very interesting lineup actually. Yes, I'm looking forward. I've tried a few of these already, but looking forward to discussing them actually, yeah.
Excellent, excellent. A few surprises, you think?
Well, yes, obviously, yes. I'm sure that's the one that's is causing most contention, so that'll be interesting. I don't actually know if I've ever tried this before.
Oh, even better, even better. Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, when I put this all together, you can just about see on the fill level here, I've done 4 recordings of this now, so that gets put straight back in the bottle every time. I'm not finishing my glass of that. So whatever you want to do with your sample set of that afterwards is entirely up to you. Maybe give it as a challenge to some people. But let's get straight into the Jura 18 and see what we've got over there. While we're sort of letting that sort of sit around, my general question I like to ask on this first one is the your whiskey origin story. This is before you kind of got into it professionally. What got you into whiskey? Any particular whiskies that kind of made you think, this is a drink that I like and maybe want to do something with?
I think it was more a distillery tour, actually, because I had this idea for the whiskey club. It was more, distillery tour and doing something good for Birmingham. And I always sort of tell this as my kind of origin story with starting the whiskey club, which is 10 this year. Cannot believe it. I know. So I was working not as a waitress in a cocktail bar, but I was working in corporate marketing. Very exciting. And I have been in Birmingham for a long time, and I just wanted to do something good for the city. So the whiskey was part of a much bigger and broader plan. And to cut a very long story short, it was the whiskey that worked. But I think, so I actually worked with experts, kind of bringing them into the city, and I certainly wasn't an expert. I knew that I was interested in it. And I would say it was probably the Ockentoshan distillery tour. I think it was my first distillery tour, actually. It really sort of cemented why I found it an interesting subject. And sitting at the bar, I'm sure many people have been up there at the time when I went, which was very many years ago. I had a lovely circular bar, and yeah, so I think it was that kind of the first experience of a proper kind of Scottish distillery tour that kind of cemented it for me. But I do remember sort of over the years, various my dad and uncles on New Year's Eve and stuff having, you know, various whiskies and having a high odd time on those. So it's, yeah, I guess it's always been around, but it certainly wasn't something I knew a lot about until I decided to set up a whiskey club.
What do you think of the Jura 18 as a way to start?
I think I will go straight in there and say I think Jura always gets a real bashing, doesn't it? I think if you're in the trade, then it has become the sort of butt of jokes. So I'm being completely honest, I haven't drunk Jura for a long time, but we do get it requested quite a lot. So I shall have a little sip. I think this is an easy drinking. I'm not going to lie, it's not something that I would normally reach for. I'm still on the kind of high ABV, quite sort of repeated whiskies at the moment. So, but I can understand people who like a bit more of a subtle dram would really enjoy this, actually.
Yeah, I think actually mine and your tastes align quite keenly like that, because I'm very much into the high ABV, big peat stink. Yeah, I mean, this came my way through the Somerton Club. It was 50 quid for, and I think, well, why not? But I mirror you exactly on that. You know, it's lasted me a long, long time, because it's just not something that I go, I fancy a bit of that.
I would say the domestic market isn't there. Market, is it really? I think they do have, you know, with the company behind them, a much more kind of international reach, I guess. So it's because, yeah, I mean, this is not, you know, it's a really, I don't want to say pleasant, sounds slightly patronizing, doesn't it, but it is an enjoyable dram. It's just, I would say, it's just not to my palate.
Yeah, like I think it's one of those things that there's nothing wrong with it, is there? It's just it's all right. And I think, I mean, like, if you're, this is why I kind of included it in this, because if you're having a flight, it's not a bad way to get your taste buds going. But if you're having, if you fancy one dram of a weekday night and you've only got one dram to drink, it's probably not going
to
be that.
Yeah, I talk to a lot of people in tastings, and people, you know, we sort of divide them into intellectual drams that you want to sit and converse at, or just drinking drams. And I would put this into the drinking dram banner. So it's, you don't necessarily need to talk about it. It's just, it is a, you know, a good dram for its type, I would say.
So the next one is going to be the Firkin Whiskey Company Firkin 49.
Great.
Everyone smirks at the title of this, but if you know much about Firkin at all.
I do, but I've completely forgotten why it's 49, because I know it's something to do with the guys behind it, and we've got a few of the bottles in the bar, and I cannot remember.
It's Mike Collins, which is he's an old Diageo guy, and it's he was born in 1949. So that's entirely it. So yeah, while we kind of let that sit around, I guess I better ask you another question. We're kind of moving on to the start of the club now. I think the first sort of event I came to of yours was probably in about 2015, something like that. Maybe just before I started the channel, or just after, I can't remember which. But you've been running events over there since 2011. As you said earlier, it's happy 10 years to you. So congratulations for that. That's truly awesome. In that decade, though, obviously your business has evolved quite keenly, but how do you think the industry has evolved? And how do you think the Birmingham whiskey scene has evolved sort of with you, I guess? Because I would call you like the architect of the Birmingham whiskey scene almost. So really, you kind of dragged it up.
I certainly did drag it up. I think so. Industry, I just think there's a lot more kind of, Twitter wasn't a thing, for better or worse, when I first started. There were a few people, but it now just seems to be kind of legions of people. And we've thought every so often about kind of really thinking about the social channels we use, because it is a hell of a lot of work. And I keep thinking, oh, I should just come off Twitter. It just, you know, it's just annoying. And every time it's like, nope, Twitter is literally the place for it to be. So I think Twitter's sort of gone kind of, I don't know, I feel like Twitter has changed and come back. For a while, I just thought it just wasn't worth it at all. And now I see it as, I don't know, there's been a few sort of rumblings over the last kind of couple of days, annoyingly, but I still think it's a positive place to talk about whiskey, for the most part, about 90% positive. And it has brought together a huge amount of diverse voices. Who I just think are like legitimately mates now, which I think is the really lovely thing. Like I've met, you know, I have, you know, if I walk past somebody in the street who I conversed with on Twitter, I wouldn't have a clue until they told me their hashtag. And I did have I had somebody in the bar the other day, and they were like, oh, you know, my mate such and such. And I was like, God, I don't know, I haven't got a clue who that is. And then they showed me a picture, and I was still a bit like, I can't remember, I'm really sorry, because I meet loads of people. And I was like, what's his Twitter handle? And I was like, ah, right, got it. As soon as they said his Twitter handle, I was like, yeah, really good friends. But, so I think, I would say the sort of social side of things. I would say the rise of things like Facebook clubs has been really interesting. Obviously, we've all kind of viewed how, especially distilleries like Bimber have just, you know, really been, obviously they've got a members club, but I think more or less, I would say that Facebook page has, you know, I think it's, you know, I always feel slightly sorry for Matt having to kind of go in and deal with all the discussions, but
only slightly.
Yeah. I mean, they're doing really well, but I think it's been I've never seen a brand built like that so much, just, you know, from from it's not even a self-led Facebook group. It's somebody who isn't connected to the company at all. So, you know, that wouldn't have happened 10 years ago. And then I guess just the rise of the club, you know, and especially through lockdown, it was already beginning, but just the sheer volume of whiskey clubs popping up, from biggies to, you know, people doing tastings with brands and stuff in venues, to, you know, Joe Bloggs and his mates, or her mates, you know, going around to someone's house every month. So, you know, it's been quite sort of overwhelming to even try and follow it. So I think like they're very, and very sort of authentic. And then I think just the sort of people who are actually in the whiskey world now, I kind of, you know, I'll sort of touch on this now, though. You know, when I first started, one of the main reasons that people were interested in talking to me was because I was female. It's fine, but it's brilliant because no one cares now. And I genuinely feel that that has massively changed. There are so many younger voices, and there are just loads of women just cracking on. That's been good. And then what was the other question?
About the specifically the Birmingham whiskey scene.
I think more places have whiskey. I think we get specifically from my own bar, we get so many more younger people coming in, which is brilliant. And I think just generally the general discussions from people like yourself, Twitter, on social media, and actually brands, kind of the way they've changed how they advertise, I think has made people kind of wake up and come and kind of find out. But we're in a great place. We're in the Jewellery Quarter in Birmingham, so we're just down the road from Hard to Find, who have an amazing selection. I know that there's a couple of other bars that I know that have a good selection. I still think training is a bit lacking. I think that's the big thing for bars to have a good whiskey selection, is that bartenders, no offense bartenders, tend to be cocktail people rather than single spirit people. And I think the education side of whiskey for bars could still do with work. But there are some amazing brand ambassadors that go around the city and do educate. So I think I would say the scene in general has risen quite a lot. I'd say Birmingham, I think we do better than other cities, actually. Obviously, I'm going to say that, honestly.
Do you think it's kind of like reaching its peak almost, or do you think we've got a lot of growth left to go?
I think there's still a lot of growth. At some point, somebody else will put another whiskey bar in, I'm pretty sure of that. I think other bars will recognise that whiskey, you know, they just have to have some training to get the brands in, get people trained a little bit. And they will expand their collections. I think that I think it's got a way to go for sure. And I'd like to see, other bars, restaurants, hotels. And I think like cocktail culture can feed that as well. I think if you just get people are interested, and that's the main thing. I mean, it is an interesting spirit. So
absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes. I hope that we're not kind of nearing the top of the bell curve, so to speak.
I don't think so. I mean, people have been saying that about gin for about 5 years, and it's still
it's still massive, isn't it? Absolutely massive gin.
People have been saying we've been, on the curve for years and years, very genuinely, and that it's, the gin craze is kind of coming to an end, isn't it? I mean, obviously gin is substantially different. But I think also with the rise of English whiskey, we're well placed in Birmingham, are we the middle of England? Who knows? But the sheer volume of distilleries that will crack the 3 years in the next, couple of years will be, I think there'll be at least, there's like 7 or 8 now that are over 3. And there's going to be at least double that in the next year, even, I would say, who break the kind of the 3-year barrier. So the fact that there's a rising scene of English whiskey, I think hopefully, because a lot of bars, love homegrown products, don't they? So I think it sort of fits under that.
Let's get into the 49 then and see what you think.
I'm a fan of these guys anyway, and this is very, very tasty, isn't it? Yeah, I think, and I like the their bottling strength as well. They go for slightly higher, so 48.9. And as you said, it's a Tullibardine, so it's roughly, 9 years old?
Something like, I think it comes in at like 8, depending on when they bottled it. But yeah, I mean, near enough, it's, it's stunning whiskey. Have you tried their Lecheg Masala cask yet?
Do you know what? I cannot remember what we've got on the bar. We've got a Kalila. I'm not sure I've got the check, actually.
Yeah, it's kind of fairly new. It's the one that replaced the rare Altmore.
Okay. No, I haven't then. I had the first 4.
It's stunning, absolutely stunning. I'll have to, if I come up to you, I'll have to bring my bottle with me.
I do like what these guys do. I think price point, I don't know if this is the same price point as the others because they were all quite uniform. I quite like that approach to things. And they're not pumping out like absolutely tons of stuff. It does feel quite sort of considered, but they're very, it's very flavorful. And you can tell it's a sherry cask, but I wouldn't have noticed this and said Oloroso straight away. There's more going on there, I'd say.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm quite vocal about my sherry cask finish or anything like that. It's not really my go-to. I mean, I love what they're doing. It's all fortified wines.
I quite like bottlers that are just sort of driven by it's still the story rather than feeling that they have to just keep on bringing out lots of cars. You can sort of see that this is a bit of a passion project, I'd say.
Well, going converse to good stuff, how do you feel about moving on to the next one?
Oh, can't wait.
So yeah, traditionally when we do the Fireball, I don't ask any questions, we just do reactions. But I'm glad you brought some water with you because...
Yes, I'm just going to clear my palate for this experience. But incidentally, we always get asked for flavoured whiskey. Not always, that sounds like every so often. It's like syrup coming out of the...
I think, well, that's the interesting thing about this, because it's a low ABV, it's 33%. You as a whiskey person, you might trick yourself into thinking it'd be quite thin, but they've thickened it up with just sugar.
Basically sugar, isn't it? So what is it? So it's liqueur blended with cinnamon and whiskey. So do you know anything about the whiskey?
It's all I know is it's Canadian.
Well, it's High Spirits. I knew it was High Spirits. So it's the same company that puts out Pappy.
Really?
Yeah. And VTAC.
I mean, why not? Because the single malts and the high-end stuff that me and you like is what, like 10% of the global whiskey market? The rest of it's all blends and the what we would call the naff stuff. But just like this.
Yeah, it's like when sort of coming onto this, I remember there was an old brand ambassador who worked for High Spirits and he went to rep for this and they have their own global brand ambassador and he just looked like he was having... like his best life because he would just go around the world. It's a little bit like they market it a little bit like Red Bull, actually. Similar kind of marketing tactics, lots of kind of music experiences, that kind of thing. So I kind of, things like this always have, there's a context and there is, obviously if there is a market, if they have a global ambassador that was flying around the world. But I just find things like that really funny that it comes from the same stable as, something that is so coveted.
All right, should we go for it then? Cheers.
Can't bear myself to say slush. When I found out we were doing this, I thought, I'm going to be honest about it.
Yep.
I'm going to try, because I get a lot of people saying, well, do you drink XYZ? And we end up talking about, Hay Club or Bells or whatever. And I talk very, kindly, and I have a very specific opinion and I have a place. This, I'm sorry, it's just horrible. there's no way around it. But I'm going to try it again, just to make sure that I know that it is horrible.
I'll mirror.
I can't, sorry, I've had two sips. When would you drink that? If you were somebody who liked that sort of thing, it's definitely got a finish of cinnamon, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's I have to say, actually, going through these recordings, it's not improving. I'm not saying that. I think maybe I'm just getting used to it. I hate cinnamon. And for me, it's not a good flavor. And every time I do one of these recordings, I regret having picked it. But it's good for the comedy. It's good for the comedy.
But I struggle to think. You're just going to shot it, aren't you?
Yeah, it's straight down the hatch.
It is straight down the hatch, 33%. When I talk about Hay Club and, Bells and stuff like that, or, Hay Club, I don't mind. I think it has a very specific entry point. It's not for us, whiskey aficionados. It's great in a, whiskey and ginger. This is not a gateway into whiskey. Because that's what those things are. They're gateways. Yes. They're brands who have got some, low-level stuff, and it's meant to open the doors into the whiskey world. This does not.
No.
I don't know what it does. All it's done is made my fingers sticky, actually.
And you know what is funny as well? Like, I don't touch this bottle between recordings, and it's usually about a week in between each one, and the cap is stuck every time I come back to it. I have to wrench it open again.
It's just kind of hovering around it. Has anyone actually liked it?
I think Aquavite said he didn't mind it because he really loves his cinnamon. And then Billy Abbott was extremely analytical of it. What did he say in his video? He said, like, every time he says he hates something, someone finds his comment and tells him that it's their favourite whiskey. No matter what he does. So basically, every time he says he hates something, he has to unlearn it and try and see it objectively, which is his job. So, but for people like me and you, it's our job to say, I don't like that.
I really don't like that.
Yeah, but I haven't seen anybody say that they liked it and they didn't have sort of a professional reason for saying that, let's say.
I now know that people probably, if any of my regulars see this, they'll probably bring me presents of Fireball.
Oh, I hope not. Please don't. I mean, if you want to get Amy something, get something nice, because
they won't.
Okay then. Hopefully you've managed to cleanse that out of your mouth. But if not, hopefully some high ABV will take that off of you.
A bit of a paint stripper, I think, next.
We should move on to some no nonsense whiskey. Okay, so we talked a little bit about the whiskey club and how it started. Before you moved on to having a bar, which we'll go on to in a little bit. You started a whiskey festival, and it was the first whiskey festival in Birmingham. That's right, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've often said, I mean, you're my local festival, so I'm probably a little bit biased here, but I think it's one of the best ones out there. It's far less like corporate than some of the ones I've been to, and a bit more personable, I think, and less busy, which is a good thing because it means you get to have more interaction time with the brands and whatnot. But it's the brands I wanted to sort of talk about. Like, how do you go about selecting who's going to come to the festival? Obviously, people come to you and whatnot, but you must have to, you know, shut the doors and say, right, no more people now. I've got who I want.
I would say it's the other way around, actually. I think I think early doors, like years ago when we first started, so the festival isn't quite as old as the club. So the festival is 2012. So we're like year eight or something like that.
Wow.
I think before, because there was nothing in Birmingham, I don't mind being honest about this, but now there are more Birmingham festivals and more festivals generally, it becomes not a bum fight, but brands have to be really picky with who they go to. And luckily we do have a strong brand and I've got the bar to back it up, etc. But it can be difficult because there are just simply, I think on the date that I've got, there's at least two other festivals. So brands, I actually feel sorry for the brands because they just get us all the time. You know, and by us, I mean, you know, all the festival organisers kind of knocking down their door. So we just have to try and be competitive, make sure our stand fee is realistic. And then I kind of, over the years, I could have really easily expanded it. And we've only ever been a one session festival, and it's been very, very tempting to do two sessions or an evening and et cetera, et cetera. And we've always just stayed at one session, and we made the decision again, we'll just stay at one session. And I think I just want to attract the brands that we do. I think it's the venue, which sadly is now being turned into a trendy film studio. Thank you very much, Peaky Blinders and HS2. slightly different eras there, but we've had to move venue. We've got another lovely venue, but it means that we've had to sort of rethink a bit. But I just want to have a really nice day. It is stressful for anyone who's organised a festival. It is extremely stressful, even if you get to site and you don't see anything, you know, lots and lots of kind of bells and whistles. For the organisers behind it, it's still a very, very busy thing. But it's kind of, you know, it's part of Birmingham's sort of festival scene now, I think. But normally we'd have an English whiskey room now. So that's one of the other things that I'm kind of quite passionate about. So the last festival, so obviously pre-COVID, we had about eight English whiskey brands, which was fantastic. And we gave them their own room. So as long as there's lots of things represented, so we get the independent bottlers, English whiskey, and then your kind of big global brands. So we try and have about 30, and then we have a few kind of local, you know, bits like cheese and chocolate. Who doesn't want that? And they always do really well because especially Niels, who is the chocolate guy I use, if anyone's ever been to the festival, they'll know him very well. And he was telling me that it's all the guys who have had a few too many whiskies, then feeling guilty at the end of the day. And he does amazingly, because you have all these kind of guilt chocolate bites at the end of the day, taking home to their poor other halves to suffer the, you know, the Saturday night of drunken people. So, but no, it's meant to be a creative festival that brands enjoy coming to. They feel that it's not just a pouring festival, that there is kind of, you know, I know from my corporate days, you know, it's important to them to have a follow-on strategy, and that for us is the bar. So it's kind of, it's people we work with and I guess new ones. But if people, you know, I think we're about three quarters of the way done for next year already. So we'll try and do, it's about at least 6 to 8 months before an event will be kind of knocking on doors and stuff.
I think it's important to know, because I mean, I've kind of helped you out a couple of times over the years. And I think the first time I helped you out, I was one of the standard helpers, which, you know, like they get their free ticket by getting there and help set up, which is easy bit, it turns out. And I think one year I stayed for the whole thing because I wasn't coming to the bar afterwards. And it was literally you, me and Alice just breaking everything down. And I was like looking around going, where's your team of people? And you were like, at the bar.
Yeah, that is the thing. And you can never have too many people. Yeah. And it's nice, actually, because we do have a lot of, I think I've got about 10 for next year already. But it is, it's the, no one wants to stay when it starts getting cold. You know, you're packed down at 5, you've got people, you know, you're trying to sort of push everyone out onto the street or to the bar, actually, for the, you know, the after party. And then you're the one left with bottles, empty bottles and miles of cardboard boxes that like no one has left, you know, no one wants to deal with. But the brands are actually very good at it, because you'll get a lot of them that they'll pack down during the day to help us, which is really nice. At the end, you'll just get these, you know, piles of card that you then just have to put in the bin. So is it a nice sort of joint effort, I guess, in a way.
And I guess, so you mentioned about having to move, obviously, which is a real shame, because we loved the old venue. Yeah. What can we expect from the new venue? I've never been to this place, so I don't know what it's going to be like.
It is different, but it's city centre, so it's up near the NIA. And I've not worked with them before, so hopefully it'll be absolutely fine. It's still, but I think, funnily enough, I mean, when you organise a festival, there are so few venues that you can really choose from. And I always want a venue of character. That's my main thing. That's why we chose the Bond. I think we were like one of the first drinks festivals to use it. So I don't just want a conference hall. I want somewhere that's interesting. So this is, it's on the canal again, but you don't have the same kind of access. It's smaller, and it has one of the rooms at the Bond was called Waterside, and one of the rooms here is called Waterside. So we were like, right, sign on the dotted line. So it's bigger in some ways. We've got three rooms, but with a slightly smaller outside, but it's easy to get to. And I think it works really well. So,
yeah, let's try a bit of this one then. See what you think. And please do be honest about it as well, because I've mixed reviews.
Quite waxy and lemony, I'd say.
Hopefully, at the very least, it should be like Aberfeldy, but not as you've tried it before. That's the idea.
It's quite hot.
Mm-hmm.
59.8. Jesus Christ! Going from Fireball 33 to 59.8. Actually, I really like it. I think it's still a little too young. I think it's got makings of something much. If that cask had been allowed to go for another couple of years, I'd say. I'm just going to put a little bit of water in. Yeah, I think a couple of percentage less.
Absolutely.
And a couple of years more.
This is the normal thing. I mean, when I decided to bottle these, the choice was to go cast strength or dial it down to an ABV that I think might have make it sing a bit more. Mm. And when I kind of try to distill the idea of what I think a no-nonsense whiskey should be, yeah, I had to go through at cast strength and let other people decide what they do with it. But yeah, I think this is very normal feedback.
I absolutely like it. And I'm not just saying that because, yeah. It's just a recharge hogshead. I'm actually guessing... I know this is what everyone says when they've, you know, been in the whiskey world. Oh, I'm going back to my bourbon casks now. I've done all the...
It's all cyclical, right? It's all cyclical.
I actually can't say without sounding like I'm a bit of a... I do enjoy going back to bourbon casks. Sorry. I'm getting a nice bit of candy floss, actually. I like it, then. I'm not just saying it because you're in front of me.
No, thank you. No, I mean, it's out of the two that I've released so far, this has been the firm favourite. But this has been sold for £45 a bottle. So
that's exceptionally good cost price for that ABV. It does need a little bit of water, but I still maintain. I think I've had a couple of years in that cask again because that, I don't know if you know, was it a, so it's just a rechar hogshead.
Just a rechar hoggy, yeah. If you're ready, we can move on to some smoky stuff. I know you like your smoky stuff.
I do.
Are you still into your peat now? We mentioned earlier about like the cyclical nature of it. Are you coming away from it again, or are you...
No, just generally no. I just enjoy peat. I think the more I read about it, I find it's such an interesting topic in itself. And obviously, we're getting asked now, obviously about conservation and the environmental impact. So people are sort of kind of very clued into what's happening, even if they're not peat, if they don't like their peat, they're kind of aware of the impact, which I find quite interesting. But with the peated whiskey generally, I was having so I have a new team now, and people probably know at least two of them. So Renata, who's very well known in the whiskey world, and Steve Cook, so two of my old Cask Strength members who well, my fun joke is that they just spent so long sitting at one side of the bar that they got employed. So and then a lovely lady called Eve, who is now bar managing. But we've all noticed the a pattern that when we do lots of stag do's and things like that, lots of big group tastings, where you'll get people who are just there for the birthday person or the stag, whatever it is, and they're looking at the whiskey like they would rather kill themselves than drink six glasses of whiskey. And they try, and they're just, you know, reminded that they absolutely hate it. And then they get to the peated one. And more often than not, they're kind of, you know, grimacing because they can smell, you know, whatever it is. We use Laphroaig quite a lot. And they'll taste it, and then suddenly, like, their whole face changes, and they really like it. And I find that really curious. So all the other whiskies are things like, you know, just sherry casks. Some are high ABV, some aren't. We'll do, you know, rum casks, whatever, just, at, you know, some bourbons, etc. And they absolutely hate all of it, and they just very much kind of, this idea of whiskey just gone, and then they get to peated, and then they're just, they love it. Well, actually, no, loving it is probably a bit of a stretch, but they hate it less. or they will actually enjoy it, and then that's the one dram that they'll finish. And whether it's, you know, whatever the cask is, whether it's a sherry or a bourbon or you know, whatever, it's I find that really quite interesting, because it's, you know, if you were coming to that smell for the first time, it would be quite, it's, you know, it's kind of, it's a big thing, isn't it? And it's such a different thing.
Earlier on you mentioned things about the tastings that you do, which leads me quite neatly onto the bar, which obviously used to be called the Bourbon Whiskey Club, now called Grain and Glass JQ. So that's a physical place that you've set up. I think, was it 2018 you opened the doors there?
Yeah, Burns Night 2018, yeah.
So that's a couple of years now. Obviously that was going from strength to strength, and then we hit lockdowns and whatnot. You've had to diversify yourself quite a lot to get through that. How did you find lockdowns, and how are you finding the transition into coming back to, dare I say, normality, but at least some kind of like face-to-face interactions?
So we changed the name during lockdown. So just for sort of history on that. So I'm really stubborn, and I didn't want to give up the name of the Birmingham Whiskey Club because it had been something that was very close to my heart. If you mention Grain and Glass and the Birmingham Whiskey Club, no one's heard of Grain and Glass. Everyone's like, "Oh right, you're a Birmingham Whiskey Club," and they might have sort of heard of this bar, but they kind of don't join the dots. But I think it was just, you know, I got sick of answering the phone and somebody saying, "Oh, do I have to book? Can anyone come in? Do I have to be a member?" Even though we put it all over the website, and I just thought, and then lockdown happened, I just thought I need to be sensible, I need to be a bit more business savvy. So Weeds, the name comes from obviously our logo, which I don't have to hand anywhere.
Oh, I do.
Oh, you've got it on your glass. Oh, I haven't actually even got one of my own glasses.
Yeah, it does say the Birmingham Whiskey Club on it, but the logo is still there.
So that lovely little Grain and Glass was designed ages ago, and it's been fairly consistent. And actually, when we were doing the plans for the bar, our lovely architect, when we were doing our kind of, you know, discovery talks and whatever, she actually called the project the Grain and Glass. And then she presented it to me as the Grain and Glass. And I was like, oh, okay, where did that come from? Because it was obviously, or in my mind, I'd always talked about it being the Birmingham Whiskey Club. So anyway, that's kind of where that name came from. And then just during lockdown, it was just, I've got to do something to make it, you know, a bit more kind of accessible, and everything we do is about accessibility and what have you. So we, yeah, changed the name. And then that was sort of during the first lockdown, and we rebranded and et cetera. In all honesty, that had been going on for a long time before. So it took a lot of work, lots of kind of new branding stuff, website, et cetera, et cetera. So it all kind of came to a head, and then obviously lockdown happened. But it was a kind of pause for thought, and it meant that we just had to do loads of stuff online. And actually that went really well. And we've, funnily enough, kind of recently we've stopped, obviously completely stopped doing online stuff. But what we've been talking a lot about is that everything has changed still. So people want to come back, but the events that used to do really well, not doing well at all. People's spending habits have changed. People's desire to come into city centres. So we're just off the city centre, but for all intents and purposes, transport-wise, we are Birmingham city centre. And there has been, we get a lot of our regulars will come in on the train or, you know, bus, whatever. And I just get a sense that they just don't want to do that anymore. And I think we're still quite far away from that kind of normality. So whereas it might feel it is, buying habits and behaviours are totally different. So that's what we're trying to sort of get a handle on. And at the moment we were just sort of cracking on, and we're just sort of noticing this pattern coming through. Although the festival, believe it or not, is nearly sold out already, which is amazing. But that is the festival. But all we do so many regular events, and they are working, but it's like the stuff that used to really work just isn't quite doing what it used to do. So I think what we're going to do is probably go back online a little bit and just do a few blended bits. But at the moment, we were a bit of a way off that because we just sort of went, right, forget all of that. Let's crack on. And then it's just slightly changed. And I don't know whether, I think the other thing is just we've made it really easy for people to stay at home and enjoy drinks. And yeah. And like, you know, I'd have a lot of people out of Birmingham coming to the club, and noticeably those people aren't coming in anymore. So I think people are drinking more locally. There's so much great stuff online, you know, obviously we're doing this right now, but there are lots of online events still happening, lots of lovely tasting packs and stuff. We've totally changed people's behaviours. Obviously we are getting people back in, but I think we're at least another year maybe until normality, if there is, you know, I hate the term, but you know, new normal.
Going back to the Svenska Rook, what do you think about it? You like this one?
Yes, I've just happily drunk that. I really like my mirror. I find them always very kind of clean, crisp. And I was just racking my brains because we were just talking about this the other day, whether they use indigenous peat. But I cannot, for the life of me, remember. I'd have to actually Google it.
Mm. Do you know what? I actually don't know either. The only thing I know about their Svenska Rook is that that 10% of the burn mass is juniper twigs. The rest of it is peat, I know that, but I don't know if it's native or imported. Good question, something I should ask them. But yeah, I really love this dram. It's my favourite of the core range. I wish it was a larger bottle, but so do all who live to see such time. It's only a half litre bottle, this one, let's say. But yeah, if you're ready, we can move on to the last one, which is the Glasgow 1770 peated. So I mean, all fairly youthful today, apart from the 18-year-old at the front. I mean, we're actually going down in age as we go through the lineup, apart from the Fireball, which is probably...
Does that have an age on it?
Yeah. But the Glasgow can't be any more than 4 years old, because that's how long the distillery's been around, 4 or 5 years. But yeah. It's a really lovely cask colour. But it's a good one to talk about, because I'm not sure if you've been to this one, but I know whiskey travels are kind of a big part of your life, and you've just been able to start going back again. Obviously, if anyone follows you on Instagram or whatnot, they know that any chance you get, you'll be off to Scotland. And I've been lucky enough to come with you on one of those trips when we went to Glengoyne a couple of years ago, which was amazing.
Brilliant, wasn't it? Yeah.
Now that you can go back, and I know you've been away a couple of times since lockdowns and whatnot, is there any places that you've been sort of dying to get back to? And is there any places that you haven't been before that are on your bucket list that you've got to get done?
Gosh, that's a good question. So Oban is where it all kind of started. So I literally just went up with Renata and Steve, who are in my team, and we managed eventually to get to Mull after a few false starts. So Mull is just beautiful. And what we were attempting to do, and what we wanted to map, actually, because I love doing the sort of content side, and I'm trying to put together a few guides of, you know, if you want to do your own distillery kind of holiday. So our plan was to get to Oban, go across on the ferry to Mull, and then from Mull you can actually get to Ardnamurchan and McNeon very easily if your boat behaves. So ours didn't. So you get to Mull and then you go to the end of Mull and you can get a smaller boat out back over onto the mainland and go to Ardnamurchan. And then there's another little ferry port at a different point in Mull that you can get over. It's called Lochaline. You can get over to McNeon. So actually from Mull to Ardnamurchan is only about an hour. So when we were sort of finding out all this, we were like, well, that's really actually very easy. The lovely guys, obviously Ardnamurchan, it's called Adelphi Distillery. Graham and Connor were very welcoming that we just couldn't get there. So we ended up going up to Oban Mull and we couldn't get into Oban. We couldn't get to McNeon. So we ended up going up for 3 days doing one distillery. So it wasn't quite the holiday we planned, but it was still being on Mull and it was beautiful. And Renata and Steve hadn't been up there before. So it's always lovely to take people up. But we were meant to come back and stay in Glasgow. So it was all planned in my head. Totally forgot that, you know, COP26 was on in Glasgow. So I was like looking at, you know, TripAdvisor thinking, why on earth is it like £1,000 to stay one night in one hotel? It's like, all right, okay. So anyway, we did it. But I love kind of adventuring that way anyway. Obviously love Isla. But I haven't done much of Speyside. So Speyside, I'm going with some of the other club members next year. We've got a big Speyside trip planned. And I'd love to get up to Orkney. I'd love to do the NC500, and I'd love to go to Kentucky, actually.
Yeah.
Because absolutely. I really enjoy bourbon, but I think what I tell people when I do tastings, you must go to, if you really love your whiskey, because you can describe the distillation process, but, you know, you can point at a few pictures of stills and whatever, but you can't really, you know, if people really enjoy their whiskey, they, you know, they should go off and do a distillery tour. And I've never seen bourbon being produced. You know, I've looked at it, you know, looked at red books and YouTube and blah blah blah, but I'd like to go over there and kind of experience it. So that's, yeah, that would be on the bucket list.
Absolutely. I was a couple of years ago, I was lucky enough to go over to Texas for a whiskey event, and it's hard to describe to people who haven't experienced it. Obviously, like the Texans live there and whatnot, but we stepped off the plane at 4 p.m. local time and we're hit with 40 degree C heat.
Blimey.
In October. And we were just like, you know, like, no wonder they can make such great whiskey in 2 years, 3 years, because and at night it drops so rapidly down. I always say, like, in Scotland, you know, obviously you've got like a, you know, if you're lucky it gets into double figures, but at night time it'll only drop like 5-6 degrees. But in you know, Kentucky and further south, obviously in Texas, the temperature variation is like, yeah, it's like 20 degrees. So no, it's like, no wonder they can do it. But yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying. Is the if you ever get a chance to go over and look at how bourbon is made, it's obviously familiar, but they have to do it in such a different way, because over oaking is a massive, massive issue. Going up to Scotland, something I'm drastically understudied on. So those guides, when you get them done, I'll be an avid studier of them, because I need to do it. I need to do it.
Yeah. Well, I get asked this all the time, and then I just sort of wax lyrical at, you know, how to do it. And yeah, I would like to sort of, you know, do more. I mean, it's always a pleasure going up to distilleries and meeting people there. But yeah, I mean, Toby Morey was lovely, and you always meet people on the tours that are all linked to the whiskey industry. So we had a great tour, and we got chatting to this couple that were on the tour, and one of the chaps worked for Uncle Nearest, and his partner worked for Edrington. No, William Grant, I think. No, Edrington. Anyway, one of those large companies, can't remember which, but they were just on a very, very small tour in Tobermory. It happened to be at the same time as us. So we're like now, you know, connected and chatting about stuff. So I kind of, you know, I love it for that. But it was when I used to go to Isla a lot, and, you know, last time I went, it was still fairly restricted. I'm usually the only English person on a tour. I always love how international Scotland is, and not just Isla. You know, when you go up to Speyside, it's quite rare that there are other groups of English or Scottish people. It's so international. I think for such a sort of a small, you know, it's pretty hard to get to place, people have to make such an effort to do it. So you meet some absolutely brilliant people there.
Absolutely, absolutely. Shall we get into this last dram then and see what we think?
Yes. I've tried this before.
Mm-hmm.
I've done it on, I think, a few tastings and stuff. I think it's fabulous.
Mm.
And it's so dark. And I also enjoy getting to know whiskies that are made in virgin oak. So obviously the colour is going to be coming in. I mean, virgin oak and PX, you're going to, you know, that can be a very young dram and still be extremely dark.
Oh, yeah. Definitely cask led, without a doubt.
But I like their kind of how they brand it. So this is just peated, rich and smoky. So I think, I think they've just got their, you know, their branding kind of bob on.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I'm a big fan of youthful whiskey when it's done right. And there's a lot of establishments out there now that are doing it right. You know, they're designing their spirit to be young. You know, we'd probably be hard pushed to find a Glasgow 1770 that's in a barrel that's destined to be 18 years old. I don't think it would work, especially not in virgin oak. But they're designed to be young. And this is the best of their range. I've said this a lot. I didn't really like their triple distilled, I must admit.
Okay.
The original was lovely, but this is just.
How old do you think it is? About three, did you say? Three,
it's got to be about four, maximum 5 years. I can't remember what year they opened, but it was only like 2015, 16, something like that. So
it feels only like a year or so ago. I feel like it has just been a sort of time suck, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, you can tell it's young, can't you? But
yeah,
it's not like the peat works. It's not overly peated, is it? I don't think they could have kind of. I don't know what the ppm is at. Is on it?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I mean, if I was going to take a guess, I would say it's probably in the 40s odd. You know, it's pretty heavy, I think, but it's not like dirty. It's not dirty like Stinky Pete, is it?
No.
Well, that brings us to the end of the tasting today, and obviously the end of my questions as well. Absolute delight to have you on the show today. At the end of the show, is there anything you'd like to sort of tell other people what's going on at the moment? Anything that's happening with Grain and Glass, and obviously the festival's coming out. Pretty much open air to you.
Oh, open air to me. I think, yeah, what I was going to say, when, you know, we're obviously very much a Birmingham place, but we do get a lot of travelling whisky people. So I always love the fact that people will kind of pop up from, you know, wherever and tell me their Twitter handle, obviously, because I have no other way of knowing who they are. So we're trying to, not reposition, because that sounds like a very kind of grand marketing term, but just make sure people. I love the idea of sort of travelling whisky people in Birmingham. Birmingham's got a big, conference scene. So lots of people are kind of, you know, coming through the city. It's always great to just have people just come and sit at the bar. And anyone is, you know, you don't have to be, with friends or anything. We have a kind of a policy where lots of people just come in on their own, which I really like. So, I'll just say come and visit or come to an event or look out for all the other billions of things that we're trying to do at the moment. But, yeah, it's just that, you know, it's what I love about whiskey is that, you know, I think I can, you know, I'd be able to go anywhere in the world, go to a whiskey bar, and I'd feel, you know, be able to do that on my own. So I kind of want to offer the same kind of welcome to, travelling whisky people, let's say.
Well, I guess the only thing left to say then is cheers and thanks for giving up your time for it.
Oh, thank you.
Cheers.